The Rama's first wife was the daughter of the Rebbe Reb Shachna, who was one of the great Gaonim of the generation. When she passed away, so the common practice in many places in Europe used to be that you would marry the woman's sister. The prohibition against marrying two sisters only applies when the wife is still alive. But once the wife passed away, so the common practice, but it says in the Chumash that it's permissible to marry the sister. And that was the common practice. So he was interested in marrying her sister. So the father-in-law wouldn't let him because he was upset about the hesped that he delivered. The Pasuk says in Sefer Melachim that when Izebel, who was an evil queen, when she died, so they said, Piktuas Harura Ukvaruha, they should take the curse of Izebel and bury her. Ki Bas Melachim he, she deserves Klavit because she was Bas Melachim. So the Rama said at the funeral, Piktuas Harura, Harura Adama Bavurecha. Harura refers to the Adama. The Harura, the Adama, should accept his wife, Vikivrua, Ki Bas Melachim he, because she was the daughter of the Rebbe Rab Shachna, who was the God Lador at that generation. So he was unhappy about that hesped because it was too good. I would have thought it sounds like he's saying that the first wife was the Arura. That's the context of the pasuk. So the story goes that he felt that the hesped was too good to have been prepared, that he thought of it after she died. He must have thought of the hesped while she was alive, and that's why he didn't let the Rama marry his younger daughter. So he married the he married the sister of the one who's buried next to him, the Sheris Yosef, Rav Yosef Katz, who also wrote Shalosh HaTshuvah, Sheris Yosef. That's how the story goes. In some communities in Europe, they had a practice that they would pressure the younger sister to marry the Alman, whose wife had just passed away. They would not do the funeral. They wouldn't bury the wife who just passed away until the younger sister would agree to marry the Alma. That's a little bit, a lot not fair. But that was a practice in many communities in Europe. Anyway, here it didn't work. The Rebbe Rab Shachna didn't let him marry the younger sister. The Ramor wrote on Shulchan Aruch. We're all familiar with the Ramor on Shulchan Aruch. Ramor also wrote a commentary on the Tur that's called the Darkei Moshe. He wrote his commentary here in Krakow at the same time that the Rabbi Yosef Kara was writing his commentary on the Tur. The Beis Yosef, then when he realized that the Beis Yosef had already written and published his commentary, so the Rama abridged the Darkei Moshe. So what we have in our editions is the Kitzur Darkei Moshe. And in recent years, in the last 30 years, they reprinted the original Darkei Moshe HaOruch, and sometimes he left out things that are not so explicit in the Beis Yosef or in the Kitzur of the Darkei Moshe. So it's of value to have the Darkei Moshe HaOruch as well. For example, one of the issues that he didn't explain well was if you have Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbos, what do you do with Shalosh Udos? So a lot of people have egg matzahs. You're only not permitted to eat matzah the whole day of Erev Pesach, whatever matzah that you can fulfill a mitzvah with. Egg matzahs you can't fulfill a mitzvah with. But the Rama in the Shulchan Aruch says, but the minig is that we don't eat egg matzahs. So the simple reading of the Rama in Shulchan Aruch is misleading. It sounds like you don't eat egg matzahs on Erev Pesach either. When you look in the Darkei Moshe HaOruch, he explains what he means. Our meaning is that we don't eat egg matzahs on Pesach. True egg matzah on Erev Pesach he may eat. Which Meshuggah is going to bake 3 egg matzahs? You're going to bake 50 matzahs. You're going to bake 25 matzahs. You're not going to bake 2 matzahs just to eat on Erev Pesach Cholias B'Shabbos. But today that we have companies, they bake egg matzahs by the millions. They make millions. That's $1 million business to make egg matzahs. So that's the Rama himself writes in the Darkei Moshe HaOruch explicitly, there's nothing wrong having egg matzah on Erev Pesach after Chatzos. The only thing is that the minhag olam is that we're machmir not to eat egg matzah on Pesach, so who's going to bake 3, just 2 lechem mishnah and 2 egg matzahs for a Pesach? There are a lot of other things also that are explicit, more explicit in the Darkei Moshe than Darkei Moshe HaOruch than in the Rama on the Tur or on the Shulchan Aruch. Then the Rama wrote also Torah Chatos, all of the dinim of the Ramon Yeridei and Kashrus are all explained in the Toras Chatos. Why in the world did he call it Toras Chatos? What kind of a lashon is that? So he writes in the introduction, just in case the rabbi is making a mistake in Psak Halacha, and he paskins la halacha that you're allowed to eat chel of Adam, so Yechayev Kores if you eat chel of Adam. And if you violate an Aver B'Shog, you have to eat a, you have to bring a Korban Chatos, so the Sefer should be a Toras Chatos. Whoever learns the dinim of chatos consider kilo hikriv chatos. So he says we sometimes the mora hara need a kapara for paskening improperly for being matir and isa chel of adam b'shoigen. Then he has another sefer Toras Ha'olah. Toras Ha'olah is all hashkofa and emuna, and he kori hu emuna. Usually the expression was b'nei yisrael yotzim b'yad ramah. In the chumash it said b'nei yisrael yotzim, they left Mitzrayim b'yad ramah. With a big gilu shchina, a big mass of millions of people, shishim riba men between the age of 20 and 60, they were older and younger, and women and erev rav. So the melitza was b'nei yisrael yotzim b'yad ramah. The Ashkenazim ayotzim be following the ramah in Shulchan Aruch. Ashkenazim always follow the Ramah, usually follow the Ramah. Right. We were discussing before, it doesn't mean that whenever there's a machlokes of Yosef Kara and the Ramah, Ashkenazim follow the Ramah. It's not that we follow the Ramah, the Ramah follows the minig Ashkenaz. There were minhagim and Ashkenaz. When you do say Tachnun, when you don't say Tachnun, what you are allowed to do on Shabbos, but you're not allowed to do, there were minhagim. So the Ramah records, Ramah follows the minig Ashkenaz. But if there's a new issue that there never was a minigon, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Ashkenazim always follow the Ramah. It's not true. Many say that that Rabbi Yosef Kara, even though they were contemporaries, Rabbi Yosef Kara was a Rishon and the Ramah was an Achron. That the division line between the Rishonim and Achronim is not the same in all countries. That by the Sfardim, Rabbi Yosef Kara was still a Rishon, and by the Ashkenazim and the Ramah belonged to the group of Achronim, the later Poskim. So it's not that we were discussing before. There was a big cause celebre during the lifetime of Rabbi Yosef Kara and the Ramah. They corresponded with each other. I don't know how they had mail delivery between Tzfas and Eretz Yisrael and Krakow in Poland, but they corresponded about the Shaila. A man left the Tzavah. A man pledged. He didn't leave the Tzavah. He took a neder to give a certain amount of money to Tzedakah, and he died before he gave the Tzedakah. So there was a big debate. The question in Rishonim, there was a big debate between Rabbi Yosef Kara and the Ramah whether the klal that appears in the Mishnah, Amiros al Agavoya, Kim Siros al Hedyadam, if a person pledges to give a korban oilah, so we say Nishtabdu Hanachasim, there's a lien on his property. By just saying Amira al Agavoya, Gavoya means Hegdish, if you pledge to give to Hegdish, there's already the Dinimaman is his chal. Even if the person dies, Hegdish can collect the korban oilo. Person pledges to give a shlamim and oilo. He can't pledge to give a chatas. If a person was obligated to give a chatas and he dies, you're not makrib the chatas. Even if he was mafish the chatas, you're not makrib the chatas after the person died. But if a person pledged to give an oilo or a shlamim and he dies before he gives it, so we say nishtabdu hanachos. So there's a big question whether that din amiras ala gavola, does it only apply to Hegdish or does it apply to Tzedakah as well? It comes up b'zman hazeh, so shaila comes up alacha l'maaseh. A man took a neder to give Tzedakah and he dies before he pays the pledge. Do you say nishtabdu hanachasim, that there's a lien on his property and you can collect it after he died? So this is a dispute between Rabbi Yosef Kara and his chubis and the Ramah and his chubis. So it's not necessarily true that Ashkenazim follow the Ramah. There is no such rule. Ashkenazim don't follow the Ramah. The Ramah and Shulchan Aruch records meaning Ashkenaz on all the issues. But it's not that we follow the Ramah. The Ramah is following the meaning Ashkenaz. But if there's an Ushah that there's no meaning Ashkenaz. So many poskim, many Ashkenazi poskim like Rabbi Yosef Kara. They consider Rabbi Yosef Kara a Rishon. There was a famous issue that the Ramah had a cousin, Maram Padua. He He was a rabbi in Padua, Italy. He was an Ashkenazi, though. Wie kommt ein Ashkenazi in Italy? I don't know. His name is Katzen Allenberg. So he, with the Nochri, went Beshutvis together. They published the Rambam. And the Maran Padua put Hagos on the bottom of the page. Every three pages, there's two lines on the bottom with cross-references. Then another Nochri reprinted the Rambam. The Rambam was around for years. For a few centuries, he reprinted the Rambam without the Hagos of the Maran Padua. So, and the second Nochri wanted to put the first one out of business. So he was selling his Rambam for less than the Maran Padua's edition. So the Maran Padua asked his cousin, the Ramor, to write a tshuva in his favor that no one's allowed to buy the edition of the second Nochri that was printed. Everybody has to buy his. So he wrote such a tshuva and he publicized it. I think it's maybe a little unfair. He never said that the Maran Padua was his cousin. He should have written that. That my relative asked me, Shan. He doesn't write that, and he gives around six different reasons why you have to dafke buy the Maran Padua's edition. So one of the reasons that he gives is that the edition that the second Nochri printed didn't have the Hagos of the Maran Padua on the bottom of the page. And you're not allowed to have a sefer Sheina Muga. You're not allowed to have a sefer around the house that has mistakes in it. So that's a humorous comment. People today who learn in yeshivas don't even know what that one line is on the bottom of the page of the Rambam every three pages. There's one line with references to the Torah and a different girsa. It's called the Rambam. It's a Sefer Sheina Muga without those lines. Very strange. But he gives six different reasons there in the tshuva why everybody has to buy his cousin's edition of the Rambam. That's one of the more famous tshuvas of the Rambam. Rambam writes in his tshuvas that he was makbid to print the tshuvas in Rashi script. He didn't print it in block letters because in the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam quotes a minig from the Rimigash. The Rimigash was the student of the Rif. The Rif lived in Fez, in Morocco. And then when he was something like 75 years old, he had to run away to Spain. And he started a career all over again, and he continued. He established a new yeshiva in Spain. And it lasted until the age of 90 for another 15 years. He started a new career at 75. So the Rimigash was one of his students in Spain. He turned out to be the most famous student of the Rif. It was Rabbeinu Yosef Ibn Migash. He was the Rebbe of the Rambam's father. So the Rimigash has a minig that you reserve Sabashuris only for Sifrei Torah. You don't use it for secular things. So the Ramo held you don't even use it to print the Shadas HaTshuvas. And he insisted he should print the Shadas HaTshuvas in Rashi script.